A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on September 28, 1997, in the series Meeting God Again for the First Time, entitled Religion, Has It a Future? The texts for the sermon are Jeremiah 7, verses 1 through 7 and 11 through 15, and Mark 13, verses 1 and 2. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Well, when I left the house this morning, Nancy said, I'm not going to be able to hear that sermon. Don't say anything significant. hardly waste a sermon on one time through. But I intend, as I said last week, to try and broach the subject that I think will be the subject of the morning, the question that this particular day raises is religion, does it have a future? And the simple answer to that is obviously yes. For religion has been with us from the dawning of human consciousness, as far back as we go, as far back as we can go. With the dawning of that awareness, that self-awareness that makes us human, and that awareness of the other, and that awareness of the other, there has been the phenomenon of religion. And so obviously, at the end of the second millennium and the 20th century, we are not going to see that which has been universally present in all times fade from the picture. In the summer series, I said, perhaps to the point at which you tired of hearing it, that religion is a human creation. And I said it over and over again because I think it is so critical that we get that straight. And much of our difficulty in the church is that we have failed to understand that. That we have assumed that religion, particularly our religion, dropped down out of heaven and is a divine creation into which we simply enter. But that is not the case. I do not believe that religion is a human creation that arises out of the human person, pure and simple. I tried to stress the fact that human religion is response, that there is an initiation from beyond. And so that the religions that we create are not generated simply out of human need, but out of human awareness of being addressed. But the structures we put together, the forms that we create, the creeds that we confess, the cult that we follow in our worship, the moral code by which we live, those things that comprise religion, those are human constructions. And they are more or less faithful to that initial encounter. And they do evolve and they do develop. but they are our creations. And so maybe the question behind the question this morning, what I was really intending to ask if I had thought more deeply and a bit longer about it, was, will religion in its present Christian manifestation have a future? And that's another question, isn't it? And that's the thing about which we really need to concern ourselves. Whether the institutional forms and the established shape of our Christian religion has a future. Well, perhaps your immediate response to me would be, there sure are signs of vitality abroad, and there are. You can tune into some channels on your television set any hour of the day or night, and you can find some preacher, some teacher of religion. You can spin your radio dial and you'll find Christian stations across the whole spectrum. There is obviously the rise of the Christian conservative movement, which makes itself felt in political arenas. In another week, there's some, well, it's not the Million Man March, but it's something comparable to that in Washington, D.C. There is a fundamentalist mentality that is alive and well in the Christian religion and in other faiths as well. And so those philosophers of the Enlightenment period, the French philosophers who saw the human story as evolving out of superstition into religious institutions, into scientific rationality, were certainly wrong, because the phenomenon of religion is not something that even at the end of the 20th century, with the burst of new knowledge and the progress in all of the scientific disciplines, religion is very much with us. Dietrich Bonhoeffer spoke about the human person coming of age and God being edged out of the world, and he was speaking out of a European context. And he meant to say that the world is really going on its way and making its way and its decisions and shaping its institutions and its future without much reference to the traditional religion that had shaped it in the past. And he was right in that. But he was speaking out of such a particular context that I'm sure if he surveyed the situation today, he would be amazed. Not simply at the renewal of a kind of conservative and fundamentalist mentality, but the manifestation of religious quest in, for example, the New Age, with all of the bizarre as well as the serious aspects of that endeavor. Religion is far from passing away. It is a human phenomenon, and it is with us and will be with us because we are encountered, and as long as we are encountered, we are going to be asking about the origin, the source, and the ground, and the destiny of our human existence. On what does it all rest? From whence does it come? Those questions are deeply existential questions that will continue as long as there is a human person to lie awake at night and think. Those questions will be with us, and there will be some kind of a quest, some kind of a response, some attempt to come into some kind of communion with that ultimate source, that mystery. Call it God. So, religion will be with us, but what about the manifestation of religion, the Christian religion, the Christian church? Some of those signs of vitality that I just mentioned a moment ago, I think, are indications not of a great confidence of spirit, but are a reaction, an angry and fearful reaction to the recognition that all is not as it once was and cannot be taken for granted as once it was taken for granted. I believe that there is a sharp conservative reaction in the sphere of religion because it is recognized consciously or unconsciously that all is not well. Douglas John Hall, who was here a year ago and whose book some of us are studying, suggests that we are undergoing a major paradigm shift which is comparable only to that which occurred in the 4th century. When the Christian faith was a movement and through the office of the Roman emperor was established as the state religion, issuing in what we have known for 16 centuries as Christendom, Hall contends that that establishment in the 4th century is now becoming the disestablishment. The disestablishment of the church, and that the church today and in the future will be very much more in the situation of the first 3 or 4 centuries than it has been for the past 16 centuries. There is an article that appeared in the Christian Century recently, written by Edward Farley, who has been a Christian educator, professor of Christian education in Vanderbilt University in a divinity school. And he reviews a book by another theologian on what went wrong in the mainline churches. And he suggests that there has been a massive cultural shift. You got cheated on your liturgies today, just 4 pages, but in the bigger one, for the big church, I quoted Farley. He's a very acute observer, I believe, of the situation of the church today. The social shift I describe has isolated powerful institutions, corporate, military, governmental, media, entertainment, from the influence of the so-called normative institutions such as education, religion, and the arts. He is saying that everything about our lives has changed. Travel, tourism, reading, high arts, popular arts, healthcare, gender roles, sexuality. Our lives are so different. And some of us are old enough to have move through some of the major revolutions in the way we carry on our life. And Farley suggests that in our society today there are major institutions of government, of military, of media, of entertainment, and these institutions that once were more or less shaped by the normative institutions of education and religion have cut themselves loose and are on their own. And consequently, what has happened to the church is that it has had to vie in the marketplace for power and influence And it has been driven to image making and salesmanship and managerial orientation. The church in our culture today can no longer take itself for granted. The things we believe and the way we live, which when I was growing up hadn't changed, I don't think, for decades or centuries, and weren't even questioned, and were just assumed by everybody I knew and the whole circle of the community of which I was a part. Those things are no longer being reinforced by the larger community and the broader culture. We are becoming more and more a pilgrim people who must make our witness known and our decisions as to how we will live, not with the reinforcement of the larger culture. There has been a seismic shift in which religion becomes just one piece of that. And Farley says the church institutions now in place, congregations, seminaries, church boards, are all oriented to sustaining the conditions of their own survival. And in most cases, sustaining the conditions of survival means maintaining the status quo. An institutional momentum exists, in other words, to resist transformation. Oh, I believe he is right. The institutions now in place, which have served well, which have shaped us and have graced us and have blessed us, are under threat. And rather than saying, what in the world is going on? And how can we meet God again for the first time? The institutions become rigid. They build the walls high. They try to say it isn't so. They persist in old ways against that inevitable tide of movement of life and history and development. And what happens? Pressed by global economic and transition anxieties, Protestant America is in a conservative mood. In most settings, liberal and even theological are pejorative words. In this conservative mood, the old line churches resurrect issues and alienations they thought they had put behind them. Issues of creedal subscription, dot the I and cross the T, of science and evolution, of biblical inerrancy and moral casuistry. As long as the mood prevails, I doubt that the churches are capable of responding positively to a strategy for transformation. Now, I didn't write that, but I wish I had. And that is what we are about here, and that's what we are about here today. Because one of the things that amazes me is how long, once an institution is established and has momentum, how long it can perpetuate itself when it has become, in large measure, anachronistic. It is fascinating to study how institutions stack the deck against significant change. And consequently, when significant change is forced upon it, there is brokenness. The amazing thing is that the Christian faith, the biblical faith, I should say, because it comes out of Israel. Israel's faith was a prophetic faith. Oh, there were the kings that wanted everything calm in the temple, and there were the temple priests, and there were the prophets of the court. But there was also a Jeremiah who stood on the steps according to the word of God and said, "Trust not these deceptive words. This is the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord." Don't trust those deceptive words. Don't fall into the temptation, the pitfall of institutional religion, which assumes that it is identical with the intention and purpose of God. Don't understand yourselves as critical to the well-being and purpose of God. Understand yourselves modestly, humbly, open always to transformation according to that dynamic spirit of God who is the living God. Jeremiah said to Israel, to Judah, with Babylon looming large on the horizon, take a pilgrimage to Shiloh. That's the place where the early tabernacle was, where Samuel heard his call. That was the place where the Ark of the Covenant rested when Israel came into the Promised Land. Jeremiah says, go to Shiloh. And what do you find? Ruins. My name dwelt in Shiloh, the most sacred symbol of your religious experience dwelt in Shiloh, and Shiloh is no more. And of course, in the gospel reading, Jesus with his disciples, they're surveying the Temple Mount, and it is a magnificent sight. And they said, boy, oh boy, aren't those big stones? And Jesus said, time is coming when there won't be one on top of another. And it reminds me of Luke's Palm Sunday portrayal where Jesus comes to the crest of the hill and surveys that same city and weeps, saying, oh, Jerusalem, if only you had known the things that make for your peace, but now they are hid from your eyes, and they'll lay siege upon you and ramparts against you and destroy you, for you missed the moment of your visitation. It's, as I said, surprising to me that we who are of that tradition can wall ourselves off against that prophetic voice that again and again has sounded, raised the trumpet, and given warning of a disease eating away at the soul of a people. Purpose ought never to be simply to attack institutional forms in order to tear down and destroy. The purpose ought always to be to find the way in the light of everything else that is happening and that has come to light. How the experience of God can be found afresh. That's why I invited Dr. Littlefair to preach here today. the things we've handled at Christ Community in the last couple of years were handled at Fountain Street Church 100 years ago. I have a little primer on religion that Dr. Littlefair wrote 50 years ago, just now being reprinted. And I want to say to myself, oh, you're a Johnny come lately. Why did it have to be at this late period in my life that I would begin to see the defensiveness, the self-serving nature of the institutional church, which has been embroiled with a battle of the modern world ever since the authoritarian structures were thrown off in the 16th and 17th centuries. In the 1920s, as I said last week, Harry Emerson Fosdick rose to the pulpit and pleaded and appealed to that fundamentalist mentality to make room for those who were seeking to reconcile the new knowledge with their faith and their faith with the new knowledge. And here we are at the end of the 20th century. Is it possible that we can find a way to experience God such that it lays claim upon us and still be people of integrity, making some significant contribution in the modern world and society at large? Do we have to accept the fate of being pushed off into a backwater ghetto? Do we have to accept a status of non-contributor to the major cultural decisions and crises of our day? Is it not possible for the church to recapture the respect of the world because it outthinks the world and outcares and outcompassions the world? This is not child's play. This is serious business. And for all of the bravado of the church, from the Washington, D.C. march to the mega churches, to churches entertainment, and all of the emotional display, I say it is a nervous, fearful reaction that doesn't trust enough. And it is a betrayal of what has characterized the Judeo-Christian tradition at its best down through the centuries. The best of learning, the best of the arts, the best of cultural values, the foundation of generations. And I believe the church striving for survival has walled itself against the transformation that the Spirit would effect by the grace of God, who, thank God, doesn't need the church, but may still renew the church in the freedom of grace.